expressed and the opinions given by the individual hosts and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of Paramania, its affiliates, or its sponsors.
You are listening to Paramania Radio.
The sun goes down, the stars come out, and all that counts is here and now. My universe will never be the same. I'm glad you came. I'm glad you came.
You are listening to Paramania Radio.
This chap is obviously a charlatan. I suggest we move on to a less...
Don't you disrespect me, little man. Don't you derogate or deride. You're in my world now, not your world. And I got friends on the other side. That's a nickel, gentlemen. Just a little something we have here in Louisiana. A little parlor trick, don't worry. Sit down at my table, put your mind at ease. If you relax, it will enable me to do anything I please. I can read your future, I can change it around some too. I look deep into your heart and soul. You do have a soul, don't you, Lawrence? Make your wildest dreams come true. I got voodoo, I got hoodoo, I got things I ain't even tried. And I got friends on the other side.
He's got friends on the other side.
The cards, the cards, the cards will tell. The past, the present, and the future as well. The cards, the cards. Just take three. Take a little trip into your future with me. Now you, young man, are from across the sea. You come from two long lines of royalty. I'm a royal myself on my mother's side. Your lifestyle's high, but your funds are low. You need to marry a little honey whose daddy got dough. Mom and dad cut you off, huh, playboy?
Sad but true.
Now y'all gotta get hitched, but hitching ties you down. You just wanna be free, hop from place to place. But freedom takes green. it's the green you need. And when I looked into your future, it's the green that I seen. On you, little man, I don't wanna waste much time. You've been pushed around all your life. You've been pushed round by your mother and your sister and your brother. And if you was married, you'd be pushed round by your wife. But in your future, the you I see is exactly the man you always wanted to be. Shake my hand. Come on, boys. Won't you shake a poor sinner's hand? Yeah. Are you ready? Are you ready? Transformation Central.
Transformation Central.
Reformation Central.
Reformation Central.
Transmogrification Central. Can you feel it? You're changing, all right. I hope you're satisfied. But if you ain't, don't blame me. You can blame my friends on the other side.
You got what you wanted.
But you're not what you need.
Good morning. And the sun is somewhere up there above those dark clouds. Good morning, Bishop David Parry. Good to be with you again.
How great thou art. How great. Oh, I got the wrong Sunday service again. Good morning, Alan. Yeah, it's cloudy down here. I'm sure the sun is shining on you, but it's cloudy down here.
Yes, it is cloudy here as well. Never mind. So, what's happening in the world of Bishop David Parry?
Gosh, pressures, wars and circumstance. All sorts of things, a bit all over the place at the minute. So lots of projects, but no ground, nothing grounded at the moment. But I suppose that's, you know, to be expected after Edinburgh, which was just 24/7 work. So I've sort of been washed out for a week, if I'm honest.
Well, yeah, it, I know it's taking a lot out of you, because there's no time for relaxing or anything, is there? You know, so... yeah, this morning's guest is a gentleman named Neil Pitts. And I don't know really anything about Neil. Why did you decide that he'd be a good guest?
Are you saying he's like the Scarlet Pimpernel? We seek him here, we seek him there. For those Frenchies. Gosh, how did all this begin? I mean, I think Neil's becoming a new chum of mine. It started on THA Talks, curiously, as far as I remember.
All right, okay.
Paul Obertelli was determined, despite everything I could say, with respect, Mr. Hilder, to do an interview, to do a show on Anthony J. Hilder, who had been in charge, of course, of one of the big Hollywood studios at one point, but is a sort of a fulminating conservative over there.
Yes.
And I was in two minds. Paul Obertelli and I don't always agree on everything, but Paul really wanted to do it because apparently Mr. Hilder's a very big name on the sort of countercultural stroke conspiracy circuits, and of course Paul Obertelli is something of a, as I'm a diehard Jungian, he's something of a diehard conspiracy boy. So we, and Mr. Hilder had a heart attack, curiously, so our first attempt at an interview didn't get too far because he sounded so ill. And I was saying to Paul in our messaging service, I'm frightened he's going to keel over, we've got to stop this. So he left it a few months and he came on the show again, and this time it was broadcastable.
Right.
Sorry. And, you know, I mean, he wasn't quite the sort of angry monster I'd been led to believe. I mean, whether one goes along with his theories about Zionist conspiracies and this, that and the other, I mean, you know, that's a different issue. But we got a message soon after the show from Neil Pitts saying he'd written a book about the New World Order. He thought it was a good idea, and it was sort of the logical unfolding of history.
Right.
And I took a shine to that one and said to Paul, well, we've got to get him on the show.
Yeah.
Again, it's not about people agreeing or disagreeing, it's about ideas and keeping an open mind. So recently, of course, Neil graced us with his presence at the recent Extremist Club, where he spoke very well. And the club, you know, remember, the Extremist Club is a unique arts and politics experiment. It's a club of extremists, not a particular type of extremist. And you can be extremely good at something. And yeah. We thought Neil fell under that category. And then he wooed them over. I mean, they were very interested, very respectful. So that's when I said to you, maybe we need to give Neil a bit more of an airing, you know, because it raises issues, Alan. What do you think?
Yeah, well... when it comes down to it, David, there's a lot of people out there have got their own take on life, and it doesn't have to be, shall we say, radical to the point where they then become like a threat to society. Like that, it's about that they've got, for whatever reason, their mind works in a certain way. They've got their beliefs. And it's about sharing those beliefs, and then people then can take on board from it what they will. In other words, it's like being taught, isn't it? It's an education program. You don't have to go along with everything that you're told, or but you take little bits from it and fit it into your own jigsaw.
Well, I mean, you and I started this show to explore the realities of spirit in all of its forms.
Yes.
You know, and with Obertelli, I agreed to start THA because we felt free thoughts and open minds were really under threat at the minute. My God, in a country which has always prided itself on free speech, you know, yes. What next? So, as I say, the Extremist Club is designed to get people together for a good old chinwag. And I think we're succeeding overall. I mean, we've had that there Father Alan Cox as well, of course, to us.
Yes, that's right. Was it November last year, I think?
Yeah, November last year. And again, you're one of the lovies of the club. They took you very well.
That was lovely. I really enjoyed that, actually. It's a unique idea to get people from all different walks of life to talk about what is important to them themselves. One thing I did find going to the Extremist Club, as you've just said, you know, people are very respectful. That they listen to you intently, you can see it matters to them that what it is you're actually saying to them, and then whatever they think is right or wrong or indifferent about what the person's been talking about, then they don't shout it back at the person giving the talk. They ask questions, but I found it very respectful, David.
Well, then, at the risk of sounding completely incestuous, of course, we had Jill down there as well.
Yes, indeed.
Who wooed them? I mean, they still talk about. We had her down with Sundar Saki, the Iraqi Turkmen activist, a remarkable lady in all sorts of ways.
Yes.
And, you know, so it was girls' night, I suppose. And the club was, you know, gobsmacked, to use an expression, by both of them.
Yeah.
And, you know, we've got to get all three of you back at some point, because you were good turn.
Is that good right? Turn. Okay. That's no problem, yeah. We will be out. I can't pronounce the lady's surname, unfortunately. Amanda from, the Gnostic.
It might be good not to give surnames at the moment.
Okay, right, okay.
Mother Amanda. Amanda.
Yeah. And we're in the process of putting together a special day, aren't we, for Gnosticism over here in this country.
Oh, certainly. I mean, Mother Amanda, who is a fully consecrated Gnostic priestess and a bishop in her own right,
yes,
has agreed to join us around the Yule, around Christmas, to hold, maybe for the very, very, very first time in this country ever, the Cathar Rite of Transmission, which is a full Gnostic Mass designed to open up the psyche and psychic potentials and celebrate the coming of the Son in all of his glory. So I'm not sure, if looking back through the records, that has ever been performed here. As a Gnostic priest, you'll be accompanying us, of course, Father Alan.
Yeah, indeed.
And we are going to make history again.
It's, it needs to be celebrated. Because up so far since your ordination as bishop last July of 2015, it's been fairly low-key because of events, the way things have happened. But I do feel spirit works in a way that lets us know when it is the right time. And I feel it's the right time this year. Very much looking forward to that, David.
Well, I mean, we will have a true celebration of spiritual realities at Christmas. And, you know, that was the original idea after all. You start with the essentials. You start with the high and the profound and the beautiful and the true. And then you share those gifts with friends and family. You know, that sounds to me like a proper Christmas.
Yeah, I agree. We'll get Neil Pitts on now. I think this
might... Is that you saying shut up?
No, I would never say that, David. Even if I meant it.
Oh, my God.
No, I didn't, honestly. I swear to you. I think this is very appropriate in the things that are going on Van Morrison days like this.
Well, it's not always raining. There'll be days like this. When there's no one complaining,
There'll be days like this when everything falls into place like the flick of a switch. Oh, my mama told me there'll be days like this when you don't need to worry. There'll be days like this when no one's in a hurry. There'll be days like this when all the parts of the puzzle start to look like they do. Then I must remember there'll be days like this when you don't need an answer. There'll be days like this when you don't need a chance. There'll be days like this when you don't get the trade by that old juice kiss. And I must remember there'll be days like this. There'll be days like this when no one steps on my dreams. There'll be days like this. People understand what I mean. There'll be days like this when you ring out the changes. Well, my mama told me there'll be days like this. There'll be days like this. Oh, my mama told me there'll be days like this. Well, my mama told me there'll be days like this. Oh, my mama told me, she said there'll be days like this.
Some music to move your soul? Then sit down, put your feet up, and start rocking with Doc. Check the schedule for airtime. That's Rocking with Doc with your host, Dr. Dave, only on the Paramania Radio Network.
Welcome to back to Sunday Morning Spiritual. And joining David and myself now is Neil Pitts. Thank you for joining us, Neil.
Hi, good morning.
Morning. David, obviously, we haven't met before, but David was telling me about your involvement with THA Radio. Could you just tell us a little bit about yourself, please? You know, how you got to be doing what you're doing now.
Okay, I'm a university graduate, 2005, but originally I won a scholarship to the University of Leeds to study physics, and I started studying the structure of scientific theory, and this turned into social theory. So I moved and studied the history of social sciences through economics, and ended up producing a theory on the social structures of the ancient world.
So, what gave you the impetus to research this? I mean, where did the interest in it all begin?
Okay, it was... Well, what I got the scholarship for physics was comparing religious ideas to those of Western physics.
Yeah.
And what I ended up doing was looking at the idea of singularity in Einsteinian physics, and it comes across as a kind of event horizon, you know, coming towards us in terms of events.
Yes.
And there's the Eastern religious view is of the, you know, the thousand petal lotus opening.
Right.
So
yes.
I was sort of making structural comparisons between East and West, and couldn't work out why people didn't realize that they were the same thing.
You see, it's a strange thing between East and West, because although fundamentally the different societies are searching for the same thing, they have two different, total different approaches to reaching the God, our God, the God, the life force of this planet, yet the total different ways in which ways that it's done. It was that part of the fascination of Eastern cultures, the way that they look at life?
It was the fact that I wanted to trace the pattern in Western science back on a spiritual level,
yeah,
to the point where they met up, and to find out what the difference was.
And do you feel that you found the reason why?
Well, what I found was that the Western model of science went back into the Middle Ages, but then there wasn't a consistency with the ancient world. And looking back into the ancient world, you've got the empires of Persia, Greece, and Rome. And then before that, this kind of great big network of societies coming through Mesopotamia, appearing to come out of Egypt, involving the use of myths in religion. The smaller empires of Sumeria and Arcadia growing into the larger empires of Babylonia and Assyria, and then that all being invaded by Persia. And what I found was that there's the fundamental divide between East and West in the evolution of those empires and religions there, because then it goes to Greece and Rome and the more modern systems of the West. So looking at this situation, I found what was known as the fall of the ancient world, where there's a major collapse in the ancient world, in the continuity and the structure of religion and society, where Alexander the Great invades Persia and completely destroys it and then totally collapses, leaving Rome at the center of world trade. So what I found was that the Eastern world didn't really function in terms of science at all, in fact.
David, how did you and Neil come to know each other?
Well, I believe it was primarily through a comment that Neil sent to Paul Obertelli through the comment section of the THA website.
Oh, right, okay.
And I get fed up with conspiracy theorists finding everything wrong. And that's said with love, Paul. If you're listening, it's said with love. And I thought, yeah, we need another view of the New World Order, and I could see Neil's reasoning. And I thought, yeah, that's a good topic to have on the show. So after a huge argument with Paul, we decided to get him on, and it sort of took off from there. I'm a great admirer of Neil's work, and I believe it needs a much, you know, sort of a more general readership, and I'm sure the American listeners to this show in particular will find his reasoning challenging and deeply ingenious.
So
it all started from a row, in other words.
Yes, a lot of things do.
I had no idea.
I'm sorry Neil, what were you saying?
Oh no, I had no idea it all started with a row.
Well, I mean, Paul is the conspiracy boy. I assume you've guessed all this by now, Neil, and I'm not.
Yeah.
Real. Maybe they have some truth to it all when it's talking about financial conspiracies. I mean, that strikes me as that's just human nature. But the rest of it, I don't really buy into. When you sent a comment originally about Anthony J. Hilder, to be honest, until Paul had mentioned him, I didn't even know who he was. And it all sort of started from there. And I don't know, I just like the flow of your reasoning. Whether people agree with it or not isn't the entire truth of it all. The point is, you need an airing and you need to be heard, and I'm a great supporter of your work in that way.
Oh, thanks.
So
hence Mr. Cox, Father Cox, he's on this show. And yes. Maybe he should be on your other show, Understanding Spirit. Who knows?
I think that would be a really good thing if you'd like to come on. That's trying to put you on the spot now.
Okay, yeah, I would. Yeah, that'd be fine.
Okay, that'd be really good. We'll sort it out. Okay, sort it out. So, where do you feel that your priorities now in your life are going? In other words, where do you see your future going? I always say quite regular on my shows that man has his plans and God laughs at them. So, at the moment in your mind, what is your future as you see it?
Okay, well, I managed to do the first book on the ancient world, and the second book will be about the Middle Ages, making way for a third book on the modern world. And what I want to show is how post-modernity was created, how we came to have the world we've got now, and how it works structurally, so that is economically, financially. I want to explain the big conspiracy myth. But talking about Paolo Bertelli, I actually believe that I could help Paolo Bertelli a lot with exposing a large social framework in which lots of conspiracies could actually exist. And whereas people are now dispelling them, and particularly governments are dispelling them, we could show where they are likely to happen and how they happen. So what I intend to do is keep on working down the same lines, work into the Middle Ages and modern period, and show something really quite new about world civilization, which is how it all comes from the ancient world, and how what a lot of people are saying from the ancient world is still true in terms of the evolution of social structure.
You see, I feel that we live in a society, the Western society anyway, that you get the feeling there's a lot of people out there feel that now is only now that mankind is coming to its fruition, to its fore. In other words, they're so far, excuse the expression, up themselves that they think that they are the creators of this world. That is true, though, isn't it, David?
That's exactly it, really.
It's on me, a word.
There's no other way of putting it. It's just, you know, but there are some people who are like that, and you listen to media, watch TV, read newspapers, etc., and not that I ever read them, and it comes over as if it's only now that matters, and the truth is our world has been built on the past, but a lot of the true meaning of what really counts has been missed somewhere along the line. And then the countries that are still in the mode of how it used to be 1,000 years ago in the sense of their beliefs are looked on as if they are, shall we say, a third world country, which isn't the case. Do you look at it like that now?
Okay, what I think this work could achieve is, I mean, I was one of those generation of students who were brought up with a lot of reverence for their teachers and who believed there was something genuinely mystical about the structure of society. So we were encouraged to research into things as deep as we could go. And it's not just the divide between East and West, it's also the idea of uniting East and West into a whole, and I think that's very much broken down and fragmented with the Soviet Union and the USA communism versus capitalism thing that we had when I was growing up. Now it's time, a lot of people see it for world peace, and the situation seems to have broken down, or rather pushed onto the Middle East and collapsed it. So we've got this Western idea of progress and now a fundamentalist idea of religion, and it's that's become more divided. So on the other hand, we're creating progress in terms of politics, but is that necessarily the whole direction that things should be going in? I think people need something that's a bit more uniting and a bit more creates more of a resolution between people themselves.
What is your take on what's going on with ISIS in Syria and Iraq at the moment?
It's a reaction to the invasion of Iraq, because I know from politics that Saddam Hussein was trying to create a Middle Eastern super state, and it wouldn't work because they didn't have nuclear weapons. So it collapsed. And it's very unfortunate, but America and the West invaded, arguably to stabilize the region. And now this is, I think, very difficult to work with now, the situation which exists there.
Yeah. It is, isn't it? I think the calculation was totally missed when we did invade Iraq. But having said that, perhaps in some ways it could be a clearing out. That's an awful thing to say, because there's that many innocent people dying. But perhaps it's a wake up call for the rest of the world that we have to be so careful in what we do. Do you see it like that, David?
Hello? Are you still on?
Yeah. Hello, David.
Right. Something went weird with my system.
All right.
I can't ever see carnage and human tragedy as a wake-up call to anything. And I think it's always good to look on the bright side, but we've got to also shoulder responsibility for what we've done and the political monsters in Washington and London that will stop at nothing to inflict their worldview on everybody else, whether it's wanted or not. The quickest way to prevent things like ISIS is for us to stop funding them behind the scenes. And it makes me very, very, very angry indeed that any of us are in this situation in the first place.
Yes.
All of it could have been avoided with a little common sense, which nobody wants to apply. And how about something like humanitarianism, which nobody's bothered in thinking about? This sort of thing makes me very angry.
Well,
you know, why did we invade Iraq? Of course, we put Saddam Hussein in that position in the first place.
That's right.
He was the best friend to the West for years until he didn't want to play ball anymore. Then we dropped him instantly and attacked the country to destroy it. I think the political opportunism behind all of this is an absolute disgrace, and we need to hang our heads in shame as opposed to think it's some sort of wake-up call.
You see, David...
Every time I see a child streaming with blood, or yet another woman being raped by soldiers, it makes me think enough is enough.
Yep. You see, I ask a question. It's like playing devil's advocate in a sense, because I think sometimes a question has to be asked that can invoke emotion, because by getting the emotion, then you saying what you've just said makes people sit up and think, that's what needs to happen. I don't know if you agree with that.
Well, as I say, Alan, don't forget, you and I, before Neil comes in, you and I are thinking of taking this on tour.
Yes.
And I think we've got to certainly advance those plans over the next couple of months.
I agree.
You know, we make a good discursive team. And, you know how much that sort of thing aggravates me.
I know.
And we've got to start taking this message to people. Mr. Pitt, save me before I start boiling in anger.
Okay. I think it was very unfortunate the way that it all happened, because the invasion of Kuwait pressed on international politics in a way which drew a huge reaction from the way, just the, you know, the way the world worked. The problem was that the world had to work in a particular way because of the Cold War. So if it wasn't for maybe that huge invasion of the Americas by the Europeans and the creation of capitalism, then there wouldn't have been communism and there wouldn't have been a balance of power. So I think people were too desperate to preserve that, and that politics has come before people there.
Believe it or not, we're out of time virtually, Neil. Please tell everybody how they can know more about you, purchase your books, etc.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, I've got a page on Facebook, and the book's got its own page, and there's a website, which is at wix.com, called Origins New World Order, and that gives a detailed explanation of each chapter and a general overview. The book at the moment is available at celts.com.
That's brilliant. I've found it absolutely fascinating, and yes, I'd love to have you on my Understanding Spirit radio show, Neil. That'd be marvellous.
Okay, thanks very much.
Okay. Unfortunately, we've got a break now. That guy's going to our Park Corner again, David. Are you going to join him for your morning, Sunday morning
I'm
rant?
I'm joining him today, definitely.
Right. Okay.
Although I've had a bit of a rant already.
Oh, that was just a warm-up, David. Okay.
Oh, that was a warm-up.
Yeah, it comes smoky if you think you know how to love me.
Thank you, Alan.
It's a pleasure, Neil. It's a pleasure. Bye.
Drive on a downtown street. Motorbike ride in the midday heat. Dust hung from the desert skies. Run though we'd run, still burned our eyes. Oh yes. If you think you know how to love me, and you think
it, fill it, curl it, find it, view it, code it, jump and lock it, surf it, scroll it, pose it, pick it, cross it, crack it, twitch, update it, name it, read it.
If you want to learn about how paranormal investigators use technology, what we use, and how it works, then check out Tech Time with Brock and Doc every Sunday at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific. Only on the Paramania Radio Network.
And welcome back to Sunday Morning Spiritual, and our big thanks to Neil Pitts. Quite an incredibly interesting guy. Hello, David.
Yeah, I'm fine. Yeah, you know, I just think you two will get on extremely well, and he's got a theory that's worth listening to.
Yes. Yeah,
you know, whether people want to agree, that's up to them, of course. But, you know, it's certainly worth listening to and thinking about.
Yeah, indeed. I agree. And just off air, while we were privately saying goodbye to Neil, he was saying that he was asking me if I believe that spirituality and, shall we say, scientific research into our ancestors go together. Well, they do, don't they, really?
Look, I mean, people in spiritualism, although curiously I think it's less in spiritualism than in the paranormal world, we've got to be less afraid of what the sciences are saying. You know, sometimes they seem to speak against what we're doing, but sometimes they seem to speak for what we're doing. You know, because the world of science is like every other field of human endeavour, has differences of opinion. You know, why is that unusual? And also, I suspect both spiritualism and the paranormal community has to be slightly less desperate in jumping on any scholar that agrees loosely with whatever we're saying. You know, I mean, these are serious undertakings. We need to be balanced and, you know, open in our endeavours, but not cut ourselves off from the world in its merry way. You know, it's evolving, it's developing. To be human is to be spiritual. Otherwise, there's something deeply wrong. Therefore, let's keep that as the baseline, and I think we'll find friends and supporters everywhere.
Yeah, because there's this thing about putting things in boxes and having titles to things, and then it gives the impression that things can't be interlinked. That's in box A, and that's in box C, and box A and C won't be linked by box B, type of thing, is a nonsense, because, you know, we talk about spirit, and we talk about it perhaps in the third sense, because we're all connected to it. And I think the reason why we talk about it so much is because we know one day we're going to go back there, and we're going to experience it again. And the truth is, it is our true home anyway. This is some kind of weird learning ground, isn't it? In lots of ways.
Oh, by the way, Susan Griffiths, good morning. There we are, I got it in, Alan. We will be in touch with you shortly. It's just everyone's been very busy, forgive us. Well, look, Alan, I mean, seek ye first the kingdom of heaven. You know, why do we keep going on and on about it all? Because it's the prime reality. It's around us, it's within us, it moulds us. You know, and, you know, first things first. Yeah. And it's a source of the love we have for our friends and our neighbours. It's the truth behind the truth of the beauties of the natural world. That's why, and we've every right to go on about it, but there's nothing wrong with a good barney or a disagreement. Or, you know, every time people want to debate a different point of view, they are doing the work of the spirit, not the people hiding from it all.
Yes, indeed.
In their back rooms and parlours, patting themselves on the back. Oh my God, don't let those horrible ideas come into this room. If they think that's doing anything, they're deeply mistaken.
We do have some people do have a strange outlook on things, and
well,
well,
They'll probably think we've got a strange outlook, but it doesn't matter. We're all entitled to our outlook. Is this part of your rant? Because that guy is jumping up and down in frustration, waiting.
Oh, God. Right. Am I on my soapbox yet?
Yeah. Well, yes, you are. And that the dog with him is getting very frustrating. He's gnawing at the bottom of the soapbox, saying, "Get on with it."
I think he's gnawing at the bottom of the soapbox because I think I've had two rants already. dearly beloved brethren, we are gathered here this morning to talk about the notables of spiritualism and their friends. So this morning I want to talk about someone who's a bit of a controversial figure for reasons people don't suspect normally, as well as being a huge name in all of this. Helena Petrovna Blavatsky, known in theosophical terms as HPB, 1831 to 1891, an occultist, a rather successful spirit medium, although she would descend into fraud every now and again. I don't think anyone denies that. Author of remarkable books, which equally is undeniable, and co-founder of the Theosophical Society. Indeed, it's probable that she gained her reputation as this sort of huge theorist because of her work in the Theosophical Society as it evolved in America. I mean, in those days, it was seen as the capstone of spiritualism. Spiritualism was a rising phenomena in those days and really making huge headway in all sorts of spheres of society, and theosophy came along. It was meant to be sort of the icing on the cake. In my view, and this is no disrespect to theosophy, because I was once a member of the Theosophical Society and still have something of a theosophical view. I think, however, for spiritualism it was a disaster, which is something we can talk about later. Certainly she was born into an aristocratic Russian-German family in the Ukraine and travelled widely around the Russian Empire as a child, the Russian Empire, of course, as it was then, later embarking on a series of investigations across the mystical East. And in those days, of course, it really did warrant that, you know, that particular description. She claimed, which is how all this started, that she encountered actual masters of the ancient wisdom. Now, what does she mean? Theosophy is a word born out of two Greek words, theos, god or the gods or spirit, and osophy, like philosophy, you know, a school, a way of thinking. These masters, outwardly, she said, were very ordinary people. You know, they'd sit down, they'd have tea, they'd miss a bus. But internally, they had developed to a stage psychically and spiritually well above the average, and they could see into the universe, into the continuum, in a much deeper and more penetrating way than anyone in the sciences, dare I say, even the arts, or spirituality and religion could at that particular time. She said she learned from these people, which is interesting, and went on, because of discussion she had with them, to write two astonishing books, Isis Unveiled and The Secret Doctrine. Certainly, to round off, I mean, because I could literally go on about her for hours, she always valued spiritualism in most of its forms, particularly the work of Allan Kardec, who we've talked about before, said she explored the astral realm personally and is reputed to have held powerful seance sessions to open people's psychic abilities. What do you make of all that, Alan?
You see, nothing ever ceases to amaze me now, David. I think I've said this before, you know, that the people that you find out about, the people you know, people you find out about, one thing that I've come to understand is that we think of spiritualism of being a, shall we say, a 20th and a 21st century, latter 20th, 21st century phenomena, in the sense that people talk about it more openly. But going down the ages, there's been brave people there who have been willing to stand up for what they know. I won't say believe, because it's what they know.
Yeah.
A belief is something that somebody believes and it might not be true. It's people who know the truth. And they'll stand up and they'll put themselves in the firing line, literally, shall we say, in some cases. And I find that there's men and women across this planet who have really put themselves out there, and they do make an impact, even if it isn't seen that way. Even if, the silly thing is, the powers that be, shall we say, that actually try to silence these people, by the very fact that they're doing that, gives more power to the very thing they're trying to stop, which is ironical, really.
Well, certainly, I mean, she's a big figure in every sense of the word. She was a big, big lady, but she was also a huge character. I mean, the things that were said about her and the level of personal attack really was deeply unwarranted, and she certainly suffered for daring to talk about the truth as she saw it. But, you know, and what was behind that? I suppose fear on behalf of the establishment, on the part of the establishment, that actually she might be onto something. You know, and this is a way, it sort of fits in with Neil's work, and it doesn't at the same time. You know, the idea that there is a global view that's just around the corner, not the charade that's being pushed on us all at the moment. I mean, my own view, and they can shout at me in the chat room for this if they want to. You know, I'm against this type of globalization because it seems to me that it's a bunch of rich kids getting together and telling us all what to do. But you have to be a caveman not to think the idea is good. You know, but it must be done where we're all included, not left out of the process.
Indeed.
So she was one of those people that said, look, there is a way of doing it. And that's, I've always suspected that's one of the reasons she was attacked so much.
You know, the this, if we call it a new order in England, because I suppose it is in the sense, Gnosticism, you know, you and myself and then Paul Abatelli as a deacon have kind of bought it into England. And then we've got our really good friend who's in the chat room, Johan Alsted, who's the Gnostic priest now in Norway. You can say that the message is starting to be heard very slowly, but it will grow, and it'll be amazing to see what impact that it has in general on how people view life.
I'm going to say something startling. The spirit is reawakening. We could say it's a self-replicating information system that actually is unfolding its own structures to the rest of the world at the minute. I mean, certainly my view is that I'm a Cathar. One of the threads that interests me most, which is why it's essential we would meet with our French colleagues, Anna. I'm inspired by the Cathar stream of Gnosticism, and also the Eugene Vintras. I mean, he was accused of all sorts of horrible things by people who knew better. So it's happening again in that particular case. You know, if people ever look him up on Google or anything, they always see him wearing a robe with an inverted cross, and it just shows the level of information nowadays. A cross upside down, if it doesn't have a figure on it, is the cross of St. Peter. St. Peter was crucified upside down because he couldn't dream of being crucified in the way that Jesus Christ was.
That's right.
So it's a sign of honour and love. So, you know, you instantly get that picture. Everybody jumps on it. You think, oh, for heaven's sake, you know, what did the man do and say? Let's talk about that instead. But anyway, one of the prime influences on me is the remnants of the teachings of the Cathars. And I'm hoping you and I and Johan and Mother Amanda can help really rebuild that delicate, insightful and beautiful spirituality this coming Christmas. I'm also hoping to talk our dear friend Susan Griffiths into becoming a deaconess. Now, I said it on air, if I haven't said it before. And I think we're genuinely building a group, a society, a family, searching, like Blavatsky, for the truth of spirit in this life and beyond.
That, to me, sounds, excuse me, perfect, excellent, very much so. You're not going to believe it, but we are out of time, David. It's
Where does it go, Alan? Where does it go?
Sunday mornings does go very quickly, very quickly indeed. So next week, we all being well, we should have Mother Amanda on, shouldn't we?
Yeah.
You know,
I mean, she had some problems this weekend with some Gnostic priests who were visiting her, that she got the wrong weekend and then somebody fell ill.
Right.
So she extends her apologies to you and to our listeners. But she's looking forward to the show next week, and we're in for quite a lively old Gnostic chinwag.
Excellent, excellent. Well, I never like to say goodbye, but we're going to have to say goodbye. So Jimmy Somerville says he can never say goodbye, so it's goodbye. There's a lot of goodbyes there.
That was good.